This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich Bradbury. And joining me in the studio for this midweek episode is Arvind Ubaraj. Say hello.
Hello.
So, Amazon, Kickstarter, robots and plastic. Those are today's keywords, but you'll have to stay tuned to find out what they all mean.
Yeah, and before we go on, the big news that broke out of the local scene this morning was Chinese automaker Geely agreeing to buy Proton from DRB Hicom. We don't have a lot of details right now, but there will be an official announcement later today, so keep checking back for the news at the top of every hour. Geely Holding, I think it's more Geely, right? Geely Holding Group basically controls Geely Automobile out of Hong Kong and also runs Sweden's Volvo Car Group. And based on this report, they'll now acquire 49% of Proton.
Interesting stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, also keep in mind that Proton controls British sports car maker Lotus, so there's a lot of reasons behind this acquisition. Our hourly news bulletins will keep you posted as more details start to emerge. Anyway, let's kick things off with our first story of the day. And speaking of surprising revelations, mm-hmm. Apple and Nokia are set to cooperate after settling a patent row.
Yeah, so now before anyone gets too excited about this headline, Apple and Nokia, they are not working together on a new phone or a new gadget or anything like
that. You see, that would be awesome because it would be technologically advanced and would last forever.
Yes.
You know, you could hammer nails in with it.
Mm-hmm. If it had Nokia's build and Apple's technology, nothing can beat it. But what this basically means is that Apple and Nokia have settled a dispute over the use of patented technology in smartphones and have agreed to cooperate. So in layman's terms, what this means is that they are fed up with this, with all these lawsuits, and they just want to get on with their lives.
So essentially, in business terms, they've kind of gone, let's agree to disagree.
Yeah, like angry neighbors. You know, like, let your dog do what it does in my garden, just make sure you clean up afterwards. So back in December, we covered a story on how Nokia was suing Apple, claiming the company had breached 32 technology patents.
Wow.
Yeah, covering displays, user interfaces, and video encoding. And now the two companies have signed a deal allowing Apple to use the technology, and Nokia will receive an upfront cash payment.
Right. So there's a little bit more to it, actually. Mm-hmm. Apple says it will also stock Nokia's health products in its retail stores. Mm-hmm. And the two companies have not revealed specific details of the financial agreement. But Keith Mallinson, an industry analyst at Wise Harbor, suggested it could be worth millions of dollars for Nokia.
Yeah. I tried to look up Nokia's health products. I couldn't find much. I don't know what that means.
Right.
Yeah. So that's probably because, this lawsuit, it covers a bunch of other patents, and Nokia has some very important ones. They were also one of the pioneers of cellular standards. But looking at Apple's business, one industry estimate is that they made $140 billion in revenue on iPhone sales alone in 2016.
Wow.
So yeah, even a small royalty against that, even if it's less than 1%, would be in the hundreds of millions of dollars for Nokia.
Yeah, it's a huge amount of money.
A huge amount. And you know, when I think about this, it makes me a little sad, because Nokia was at one time, they were Apple.
Right.
Yeah, they were the giants of the mobile industry. So now to see them kind of, I wouldn't say settling, but to see them in this sort of dispute as the number two, or the, not even number two, number five, six, whatever it is. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of, it's sad.
My first phone was a Nokia. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I had loads of them, you know, because they lasted forever. The battery life was great. But then you think about it, you know, our phones now, they're computers in your hands, right?
Yeah, they're
signaling this, signaling that. There's no wonder the battery life dies down anyway.
It's not even a phone anymore.
It's not. Anyway, so between 2009 and 11, the two companies were locked in this series of legal battles over the patents for the technology they used in their mobile phones. Yeah. At the time, Nokia was still the world's leading mobile phone manufacturer, was being quickly undermined by the rise of Apple's iPhone. As soon as that dropped, everyone went, I want one.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much it for this story. We just wanted to give a quick update on this whole Apple versus Nokia lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I can call this a happily ever after, but at least they found a way to coexist. Now, moving on from two tech giants to one ginormous tech giant, news just broke out that Amazon is bringing live broadcasting to Europe to compete with Sky, Facebook, and Netflix.
Right. So Amazon is launching a new service for members of its Prime Video subscription service in the UK and Germany, allowing them to watch live television broadcasts in an effort to compete with its rivals. So this service is called Amazon Channels, which was previously launched in the US, and it allows customers to pick and choose subscriptions from a list of 40 different channels, including Discovery, MGM, Eurosport, Player, without having to sign up for a bundle of programs or enter a long contract. Oh, that sounds so familiar.
Yeah, and right. And this type of, you know, a la carte business model differs from other subscription bundles offered by premium TV providers in that region, such as Sky. Meanwhile, Amazon's main streaming rival, which is Netflix, has no plans to offer live TV. And this is what I like, because Netflix is confident. They're not jumping on models that they're not familiar with. They're sticking to their guns, and they're offering what they know how to offer.
Right.
Yeah, that's why when I look at them, I think they are so smart in everything that they do, content creation, and even the way that they offer their catalog to users and consumers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I know they've recently sneakily opened up an office very nearby here. So we know that there's going to be local content going into Netflix
Slowly seeping in,
which is great. I mean, I know we have iFlix, but when you have Netflix and the budget of Netflix, I can't wait to see some of the local stuff that comes out. Anyway, Amazon's model is pretty interesting because for the first time, Prime members in the UK and Germany will be able to choose to watch premium TV channels without having to sign up for a bundle or contract, giving them the freedom to pay for only what they want to watch. Obviously, the move will be highly disruptive and will threaten Sky's dominance in the pay TV market in Europe. This is according to Paolo Pescatore, Director of Multiplay and Media at CCS Insight.
Yeah, and they're also offering channels that before this were exclusive to Sky. For example, Amazon is able to offer Discovery's fleet of channels, which is a big bonus in their catalog. This is the first time the Discovery's channels have been made available outside of the Sky universe and, you know, out of a bundle itself.
Right.
So what Amazon is doing is basically using its on-demand streaming model and applying that to traditional forms of cable television. So it allows you to pick only what you want, and then it broadcasts it, you know, to your TV set.
Great stuff. This will probably force a lot of households then to think twice about their pay TV subscription and cut the cord. I cut my cord quite a while ago, I have to say. We've seen this behavior happen in large numbers across the US, of course, thanks to other streaming services like Hulu. If Amazon will add more live TV, such as a sports channel in the future, they've basically crafted a cable killer for themselves.
Cable killer, yeah. So this move by Amazon will also allow it to continue to compete with another unlikely player in this scenario, which is Facebook. Facebook is investing heavily into live video, and it recently signed a deal to, you know, live stream 20 Major League Baseball games, and then immediately after that, in April, Amazon bought the streaming rights for Thursday night National Football League games. So it's a very tit-for-tat thing that's
sneaky,
going on. Yeah,
yeah,
very sneaky.
So here's an interesting note. Pescatore of CCS Insight also warned that the a la carte system offered by Amazon could have adverse effects and may even confuse and frustrate customers. So he predicts the trend of TV programming delivered via the internet will see a return of large content bundles. He's basically saying that too much choice is also frustrating, and consumers might just resort to letting cable providers do the bundling for them for a small fee and lesser decision making on the consumer's end.
Yeah, so his logic is that there's been a rush toward online video services and, you know, the so-called skinny bundles.
Right.
Yeah, accompanied by a bunch of separate apps for each provider. But in reality, customers might not want to sign up for numerous services and receive more bills and, you know, be forced to open several apps to find the content they want. That's where cable may have the advantage. And I kind of agree because I can't remember when's the last time I turned on my traditional TV. It's all Netflix. It's all streaming for me. But I think in my circle of friends, I was one of the last people to give up on television.
Really?
Yeah, because there's a kind of a coziness of watching TV. And I think it also applies to radio. There's something about turning on the radio or turning on the TV and not knowing what you're going to find.
Right.
And just having that spontaneous decision of seeing, oh, you know, this is going on, or this song's on air and I want to just listen to it.
You're right.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll talk about the startup scene in Japan and how Kickstarter, in fact, plans to leverage on the status of that scene. That's all coming up next on BizBytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Brilliant financial model. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich Bradbury, and
Arvind Yuvraj.
On this Wednesday, the 24th of May, so far we've talked about some of the really big names in the industry: Apple, Amazon, Netflix, big players. But what about if you're starting to do something for yourself? You know, what if you have an idea that you think people might love? Who would you turn to? And of course, one of the options is Kickstarter, right?
Yep. And now nearly 1 year after Kickstarter first began opening in Asia, the popular crowdfunding store is set to venture into Japan.
But I thought Kickstarter was already everywhere.
Hold up, Rich. Let me pull up these stats. once enacted later this year, it'll be much easier for Japanese entrepreneurs to take to Kickstarter. For the first time, they'll be able to raise funds in yen and register projects under their local business credentials.
Right.
Yeah, and to be fair, there have been a number of Japanese hardware startups raising money on Kickstarter in the past few years, such as Fove with its eye-tracking VR headset. But they've had to jump through some tricky hoops to do so.
Yeah, from what I understand, they've often had to resort to finding overseas investors and or partners. Mm-hmm. Here's a quote for you from Benjamin Joff from Hax. He said it'll remove a barrier for Japanese creators. Some had to find a partner in the US to run a campaign, which of course added friction. He's an investor that looks at young hardware companies. So the Tokyo-based Fove team, the one that you were just talking about with the headset, mm-hmm. linked up with an associate in San Francisco before it could raise $480,000 on Kickstarter for its VR gizmo. Have you seen Lost in Translation?
Good movie.
Right, it's a great movie, but obviously, you know, the title kind of speaks for itself. The idea of how difficult it could be dealing with one culture against another and all of those kind of very different business approaches is kind of coming
that get
fore.
Lost in translation.
That get lost in translation. Yeah,
yeah. So Kickstarter's Japanese expansion looks set to be a boost for local gadget startups, which have been slow to make the kind of impression made by illustrious forebears like Sony and Nintendo,
the behemoths.
Yeah, the giants in the scene, right? Mm. So entrepreneurship is becoming cool in Japan, says James Riney, 500 Startups Japan boss last year. The late start is seen in the amount of venture capital pumped into startups in the country, which falls short of the amount pumped into tiny Singapore. I like how they had to add the tiny before Singapore. As if we didn't know. 2016 saw about $689 million for Japan versus $1.4 billion for Singapore startups, according to the Tech in Asia database.
I mean, we almost did a story about Singapore today, didn't we, about how tech is a huge thing there and the mm-hmm. amount of money that has been poured into that.
Yeah.
And this is what I find kind of odd. That entrepreneurship isn't seen or hasn't up until now been seen as a cool thing in Japan. I mean, when I think about the future and tech and all things futuristic, the images that I have in my head are places like downtown Tokyo, you know, alongside places like Seoul and Shanghai.
All these places are very sleek and futuristic designs. Yeah.
Right. And so the idea of entrepreneurship and doing something for yourself and moving into tech, mm-hmm. it seems like the place that would have kind of been blossoming, right?
Yeah, but it's weird that this is coming out now that it's not a cool thing in Japan.
Right.
Yeah. So the guy from Hax, Benjamin Jeff,
Joff.
Joff describes the state of Japan hardware startups right now as not great. The number of startups is quite low. The many hardware projects are more than designed on niche projects than high tech startups. And the gap has widened between makers and startups, and Japan hasn't quite crossed that bridge yet.
Right. Interestingly, of the 201 gadget producing startups that this fellow Joff has invested in within Hax, only two have had Japanese co-founders. While he sees Kickstarter and rival platforms have been important to that growth, a lot more is needed. He says, I think the problem is more fundamental. The lack of safety nets in Japan for entrepreneurs makes it almost suicidal professionally and financially. He states, as long as conditions do not change, I do not expect a rise in the number of startups making hardware in Japan. I mean, I wonder what it is that needs to be different.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you should say that, because he also goes on to say, for things to change, companies need to start valuing the startup experience and hire or rehire startup people. This is truly the number one thing to fix.
Right.
Yeah, and corporate should realize that all the open innovation talk will not work well without startup people on the inside. So a few other things could be adjusted on the regulatory front. Let entrepreneurs keep social benefits when they start a company until they have a regular income or allow sabbaticals from jobs.
Right. So from what the takeaway from this then is that once
you've got yourself a large, decent job inside a Japanese firm.
Mm-hmm.
You're comfortable, everything is provided. You don't want to take that risk of kind of stepping out of that box.
To start something new.
To start something new that might not work.
Yeah, and unless there's some way to implement that culture into the startup scene,
right.
I'm thinking, which kind of doesn't make sense because it's a startup scene.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, fingers crossed. Really looking forward to seeing some of the stuff, of course, that will come out of Japan after mm-hmm. this. And you know what's bound to happen. It's going to be futuristic and fantastic and some of it very, very
pretty,
weird.
Pretty weird, yeah.
It's the thing only Japan can do. Anyway, we'll be right back after this breather. More messages here on BFM 89.9, the business station. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes. We'll be right back.
Being first matters. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes with me, Rich, and Arvin over there.
Mm-hmm.
So, Arvin, cue some Westworld music, right?
Okay. I was trying to think about the Westworld music, and then I completely forgot what it was.
Well, we're going to be talking about robots taking over the world again. Okay, I'm exaggerating. They're not really taking over the world just yet. Just more of our jobs.
Yeah, so we know that robots have already caused millions of factory jobs across the U.S. over the past year. And according to a new study by the American financial services firm Cornerstone Capital Group, next up for our friends in the States could be jobs in retail or your friendly neighborhood stores. The study claims between 6 to 7.5 million existing jobs are at risk of being replaced over the course of the next 10 years by some form of automation.
Well, at least it'll stop some people complaining that foreigners are taking jobs, right?
Yeah, of course. Now it's robots.
Now it's robots,
jobs.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, I should move away from that, shouldn't I? And that represents at least 38% of the current U.S. retail workforce, which consists of 60 million workers. So this study adds that retail could actually lose a greater proportion of jobs to automation than manufacturing has. That's interesting.
It is. And but before anyone starts panicking, we just have to say that this doesn't mean that robots will be roving the aisles of your local department store chatting with customers in the next few years. Instead, expect to see more automated checkout lines instead of cashiers. This shift alone will likely eliminate millions of jobs. So cashiers are considered one of the most easily automatable jobs in the economy, said the report. And these job losses will hit women particularly hard, since about 73% of cashiers are women.
Right. I had a cashier's job for all of 1 hour and 45 minutes when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't until my manager came around and told me how much I was getting paid, I kind of took the job and went, okay, and I'm doing it. And I said, how much am I getting paid? She told me. I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm out of here.
That was the end of that.
That was the end of that.
But it wasn't a robot.
It wasn't a robot. No. I felt like a robot, though, to be fair. All right. There will also be fewer sales jobs as more and more consumers use in-store smartphones and touchscreen computers to find what they need, according to John Wilson, who's the head of research at Cornerstone, as we mentioned before. There will still be some salespeople on the floor, just not as many of them.
Yeah. And stocking shelves and inventory control, which is a labor-intensive job function today, will also be made far more efficient with automation. But Wilson says that you're not only going to see a robot stocking shelves, at least, you know, in the near term. He, however, added that technology would reduce the need for as many people to do so. More efficiency means fewer things for people to do. And this is something that I completely agree with. I know that it might be controversial to say, but I think that automation and robots going into the workforce and taking over certain jobs has to happen.
Right.
Yeah, for people to move into more, they'll be able to move into more creative fields instead of just doing something that is, I don't want to say unfulfilling, but they could do something that is more significant to their lives.
Maybe writing software to run those robots.
Maybe.
Something like that. I mean, I think that's definitely the huge market that's happening right now. The idea of programming and online learning for programming is becoming a huge thing.
Yep.
Right. So we know after last week's Enterprise Rocks retail conference, and if you weren't there, shame on you,
mm-hmm.
That the retail industry is currently undergoing some cataclysmic changes. Plus, some American analysts say about 3,300 stores will close across the U.S. this year. But get this. Wilson, who's the research head at Cornerstone, believes that automation will drive more job losses than store closing in the next decade. He says store closings have to do with overbuilding and e-commerce. But going forward, job losses will really be about automation.
Yep.
So he's hammering it, right?
Yep. He's kind of driving the thing home.
Yeah.
Rising wages are also helping to drive automation as state and city governments hike their minimum wages. Additionally, several major retailers, including Walmart, the nation's largest employer, employer have increased wages in order to find and retain workers that they need. And then you've got to take into account the increased competition from e-commerce as well. And we know Amazon already uses tons of robotics in its fulfillment centers, so you know that its workers spend very little time on each other. So all in all, it doesn't look like there will be many love stories that begin with a wink at the grocery store. Check out in the next decade. That thing is gone. Unless robots can fall in love.
Oh, you're opening up an entire can of worms here, right?
Yeah, so you've got a robot buying your groceries, right, and then it falls in love with the robot that's checking out the groceries.
Nice phrasing there, Arvin. Well done.
That's why I stopped.
Yeah, well done, though. Right, but then again, we could have, like, Blade Runner 2, and I'm sure there's going to be more about it, and we don't need to get into that. Have you seen Blade Runner? Of course you've seen Blade Runner.
I have. All six Blade Runner versions.
All six different versions. Wonderful. All right, we're heading into our final break of the show, but when we come back, we're going to reveal one of the most plastic contaminated spots in the world. Enterprise Biz Bytes will be right back after this. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bemused football managers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's our final segment with me, Rich Bradbury, and of course Arvin over here.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you tuned into the show last Friday, whilst Audrey was on the show, you may remember that we spoke about a Norwegian, I believe, multimillionaire who'd spent some huge amount of money on a research vessel, in air quotes. A fancy yacht, I reckon.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Right, to go around the ocean collecting some of the floating plastic that we were reading about. And if you missed that show, of course, you can download the podcast on the website or download the app from the Apple iOS store or from Google Play. Anyway, Arvin, you had an opinion about this fellow, didn't you?
I did, because I was listening. I listened in on that show, and I was listening to what he was doing, and he basically built something to sort of clean up the plastic from the oceans,
right.
And I don't know whether he was going to recycle it or what. But then I was like, there is a giant elephant made of plastic in the room that no one's addressing, because it's so obvious that he wants the plastic.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think. I can't be sure. I'm not saying that that's fact, but what I think is he wants the plastic that's in the ocean because there's so much use for it.
Right.
Because as we know, plastic has, you can recycle plastic and you can make other things out of plastic.
Right.
And it's basically free.
Right.
Because it's in the ocean. It's some other guy's garbage. One man's trash, another man's
Correct.
Treasure kind of thing, yeah.
And we kind of came to the conclusion that a millionaire is going to millionaire.
Yes.
Right? Anyway, so we kind of have a bit of a related story today.
Yeah, so as we know, plastic is durable. It's very, very durable, which is why we like it and cannot stop using it. Since it started being mass-produced in the 1950s, annual production has increased 300-fold. Like, can you believe that?
That's insane.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you expect to decrease over time because
right.
of how it pollutes the environment, but it keeps going up each and every year.
Right, and because plastic is so durable, when our kids grow up, eventually, if we ever have them, we purge ours and their toy chests, mm-hmm. or even just when we finish a bottle of laundry detergent or shampoo, it doesn't go away.
It doesn't go anywhere. So while we're recycling increasing amounts of plastic, a lot of it still ends up in the ocean. So floating garbage patches have brought some attention to the issue of our contamination of the seas.
Yes, and of course, our friend Röker, the guy with the yacht, will be there to scoop it all up and
recycle it and make the world a better place.
Right.
But it's not just that the waters themselves have ended up being cluttered with plastic. A recent survey shows that a staggering amount of our stuff is coming ashore on the extremely remote Henderson Island.
And where's that then?
Well, Rich, I'm going to tell you. Henderson Island.
Of course you are.
Yeah. And it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site in the Pitcairn group of islands. I think that I'm saying that right.
Pitcairn.
Yeah.
It's
of
one
islands.
Of the very few English territories left in the South Pacific.
Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah, so it's roughly halfway between New Zealand and Peru. According to UNESCO, Henderson is one of the best examples we have of an elevated coral atoll ecosystem.
So the elevated coral atoll ecosystems, the ones that we've had or that we probably know about have been used either for bits of tourism mm-hmm. or for firing nuclear missiles on.
Oh, so one
this
of those
is,
two.
Right, one or the other.
That's a wide range.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was colonized by Polynesians between the 12th and 15th centuries, but has been uninhabited by humans since then. It is of interest to evolutionary biologists because it has 10 plant species and 4 bird species that are only found there.
Right. But despite its uninhabited status and its extremely remote location,
A recent survey of beach plastic on this island has revealed that the island has the highest density of debris reported anywhere in the world.
Wow.
An estimated minimum of 37.7 million items weighing 17.6 tons. So this represents the total amount of plastic that is produced in the world every 1.98 seconds. Just let that sink in for a second, or 1.98 seconds. Mm-hmm. It's a huge amount on this tiny little island.
And within that small amount of time that we were just saying things,
yeah,
that much more plastic has accumulated
right
there. Yeah, so, and this is a conservative estimate of the debris accumulated on the island, since it includes only items that were at least 2 millimeters in size and were within the top 10 centimeters of sand. Up to 26 new items wash up every day per meter of beach. So there is no major landmass within a 5,000 km radius of Henderson. So all the plastic that ended up there originated from elsewhere on the globe.
Right.
Plastic ends up in places like this because it is buoyant and can persist for decades as it is degraded into even smaller particles by waves and sunlight. The global plastic production is still increasing, so this problem isn't going to go away.
Mm.
This plastic debris is bad for turtles, bad for shoreline invertebrates, bad for seabirds, and, you know, it's just gross in general. The way it even affects the animal life and the fish life around the island is just...
It's scary, dude. I mean, you only have to look at some images from this very small atoll island, and it's horrendous. I mean, we know how dirty parts of KL can be, you know, mm-hmm. in particular areas. It's literally like that, but on a tiny desert island.
Very small island.
Very small.
Yeah.
These researchers who conducted this survey are hoping that this information will somehow help motivate people like us to limit plastic pollution. You know, once our plastic garbage is out of our sight, it tends to go out of our minds, right? Mm-hmm. But in fact, it congregates on isolated islands that, thanks to us, are now anything but pristine.
Yeah, but have you seen the video on YouTube about the one with the turtle that's they're trying to pull something out of its nose?
No.
No, there's something, it's a straw or something that's lodged so deep up its nose that a group of people had to try. And the video is about 20 minutes long or something like that. And it's, you know, it's heartbreaking to see something like this happen.
Right. It's time to wrap up the show. But before we go, you know we like to give you a recap of the stories we covered today. We kick things off with Apple and Nokia becoming frenzies, almost, settling a dispute over the use of patented technology in smartphones and now agreed to cooperate. It's not really happily ever after yet, but at least they've found a way to coexist.
We then spoke about Amazon launching a new service for members of its Prime Video subscription service in the UK and Germany, allowing them to watch live television broadcasts in an effort to compete with its rivals. The service is called Amazon Channels and will allow customers to pick and choose subscriptions from a list of 40 different channels without having to sign up for a bundle of programs or enter into a long-term contract. I would like to have something like this.
Here in Malaysia. It would be nice if one of the providers could give us something like this.
Yes.
Right? Just to have that option.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, moving swiftly along, we spoke about how the Japanese are now finally allowed to put their stuff up on popular crowdfunding store Kickstarter, paving the way for hopefully some wonderfully weird and exciting stuff for the rest of us to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. And then we talked about how robots could potentially, over the next 10 years, take over some 6 million jobs in the retail industry in the US alone. This, however, doesn't mean you'll be interacting with robots at your favorite store, but more automated checkout counters and smartphones and touchscreen computers for you to find what you need when you shop.
Finally, that story on Henderson Island, which is a UNESCO World Heritage Site, roughly halfway between New Zealand and Peru, which researchers have now said has the highest density of plastic debris reported anywhere in the world.
Yeah, remember, if you want more deets on these stories, all the links to the articles discussed today can be found on the Enterprise Biz Bytes podcast page, which you can find on our website, bfm.my, or on the BFM mobile app, available now on the Apple App Store and on Google Play, and on Apple's CarPlay as well.
Yes. And now, next up, it's the Breakfast Grill replay. The Morning Run's Tan Chung Han spoke to Chung Yi Mun, who's the CEO of Prince Court Medical Center, this morning on premium medical healthcare in a time when the medical industry is facing an oversupply of doctors, rising medical inflation, and the weakening ringgit. That's up right after the 1 p.m. news.
Yep, and that's a wrap for BizBytes today from myself, Arvind Yuvaraj, and the ever-charismatic Richard Bradbury.
Oh, please.
Yeah, here's wishing you a great Wednesday ahead, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.